Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. It's always so helpful when we have interviews with therapists and social workers and others who can help us as we walk along the foster care journey, and those of us who are maybe our adoptive parents. But there's also interviews I get to do with people who have been in the system or have, they've walked through some difficult times as children, and they're able to share with us another side of what foster care ministry looks like. And so today we get that privilege. And so, Kristen Thomas, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm so honored to be here.
Well, girl, you're everywhere. I mean, you're either on a speaking panel in your state, or you're on a PBS documentary, and I cannot wait for you to share with everyone about the Matthew West song. You got a lot going on.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, tell us how you, this is just going to be a very interesting podcast recording today. I'm so excited to share it. But tell us how you first entered the foster care system and kind of how that began in your life.
Absolutely. I entered the foster care actually a little bit later on, like preteen, teen. But DSS was involved in my life off and on growing up. I came from a family that absolutely prayed for me and wanted me and loved me, but unfortunately just didn't have the tools and the health overall to be able to steward my heart well. So unfortunately, I did suffer quite a bit of physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, emotional abuse growing up. And it's funny too, because if you take the context of my story away, a lot of the behaviors that I had growing up screamed that there was something going on at home. But I came from a well-known family for great reasons. And unfortunately, it took probably until my preteens for my voice to match my behaviors and essentially the shame to come off that I am not what I'm doing. The survival behaviors that a lot of kids that have experienced foster care and abuse suffer through. And it really took some great educators, therapists, and just a team of people to see past what I couldn't say and help me to find the voice. So that's how I ended up getting into foster care. I started out in kinship care. So I lived with a family member for a time, and then bounced around to a couple of foster homes. And when I aged out, I was able to then be an extended foster care, and was able to bounce around to a lot of really, really great homes that made just a long-lasting impact on me.
Well, you know, when you and I were talking earlier, you said you actually knew about Jesus as early as 5 years old.
I did, yes. Oh, my goodness. So I was attending a church, and one of the guys came up, and he sat us down, and he shared that there would be a best friend that could come in and live in your heart and protect you and care about you. And I was like, oh, man, what's going on at home? I need that. Sign me up. So I accepted Jesus in my heart, and I was going to a Christian private school at the time, and one of the teachers actually pulled me aside, and the administrators, and they're like, hey, we noticed that there's some hygiene issues, like what's going on? And I was able to share that I accepted Jesus into my heart, but I didn't understand that he wasn't in my organs and I could actually drown him. So
a child's perspective, though, yeah, it's so
absolutely
sweet.
But I felt his tangible presence come in my heart. And wow. I know that it is because of his grace that my heart's been able to stay somewhat softened towards him throughout my life.
Yeah, you shared that Jesus gave you a soft heart, you know, and you would just cry at school. I guess school maybe was more of was it a relief to be at school when you were younger?
In the beginning, no. I went to a Christian school that had very little understanding of trauma. And so, yes, I would go to class about 8 years old, and I would just get there and just cry uncontrollably all day. Oh. And that is a big indication, right? There's something not right. And instead, and they did try some interventions and talking, but when it didn't work, they had a little stool for me outside the classroom. They would sit my little butt on and just until I could get myself together and I could come back inside. And I remember it was the day after picture day, I attempted suicide for the first time at 8 years old. And there was a lot of other behaviors that screamed that something was coming that, you know, would be really drastic. But unfortunately, just in their lack of awareness and understanding, I got labels put on me as like ODD and ADHD, when in fact they were very much my body telling what my words could not.
Yeah, that whole body keeps the score thing. I mean, it is true, isn't it, Krista? I've learned a little and I've got so much more to learn, but it really does. And just to have educators know about it, it would be so helpful.
Absolutely, especially in how even just in my first couple of months of life, I was born premature due to domestic violence, and just that impact of the developmental trauma, even in utero and in the first couple of months to years, that impact is still felt today and in my health and certain challenges that I have. So it all paints a picture, right? And we have to take into account all of us and not just current behaviors or presentations.
So how were you finally removed from your home? You said you went into, the first time you went into a family care situation?
Yeah, so I was unfortunately self-harming at that point and having an eating disorder and running away and abusing some of my ADHD pills. And so without it being a typical removal, it was more so, hey, like there's a lot going on. And at this point, I was able, especially I had a fifth grade teacher that really kind of was like persistent and just not letting go until something happened. And so that happened first, but then I ended up back home, you know, just months later. And I think it was my eighth grade teacher who really put her foot down, Miss Whitmer, and was like, no, like something is going on. We're not going to move past this. We're going to figure out, you know, what's going on. And so it was her intentional care and just love over me that gave me the ability to say, okay, yes, this is what's going on. I don't really understand it because, you know, I'm a big believer that there's no villains in my story, right? There are really hard behaviors and things that have happened to me, but those people are complicated. There's really wonderful sides of them, and there's really hard sides, especially when it comes to mental illness and just inabilities to parent and cope with certain things. So it was really complicated for me to say the chaos and the abuse and the things that are happening in my home are not my fault. This is actually what's going on. And so once that happened, I was actually empowered to be able to say, I don't want to live with my mom anymore. I want to be safe. And then too, you know, living with a family member was wonderful, but I always had access to my mom. And as you know, we've talked about TBRI and this idea of felt safety. I would maybe have physically safe. Sometimes I actually wasn't, but I was mostly physically safe, but I wasn't emotionally safe. And so the behaviors end up, you know, continuing to get worse. And I was able to go and live with complete strangers. And magically, a lot of my behaviors stopped. You know, as soon as you get into a place where you're known and safe and you're made space for, yeah, life really started to build after that. So it was wonderful.
You know, I think it's incredible that you can say, even at that age, I realize that when I finally got into a place of felt safety, my behaviors changed, that you recognize that about yourself.
Right. But unfortunately, it was until I was 19. You know, I had already been homeless. I had already aged out. I had graduated high school early, but I was working full time and trying to go to school and living in my car. There was just so many things stacked against me. And having that final experience of safety, I was like, oh, like, this is so different from everything I have grown, you know, like it's possible. I am who I am and it's just possible.
Wow. And so from what I understand, Kristen, your story, you were finally adopted, right?
Well, I was adopted at 8 years old by a step parent. And unfortunately that did not work out. He very quickly left our family. A couple years ago, one of my adoptive daughters, my adoptive daughter was living with a family, the Thomases, and they just very quickly became like family to us and just took us both under their wing and have been an incredible place of stability and love and So I'm just so thankful. They're like big brother and sisters.
Oh,
you know?
I love that.
So it's not
yeah.
an a true adoption,
right.
but I got to change my last name to them so that I could adopt my daughter, because unfortunately with her story, she also comes from a failed adoption. And so we wanted to start fresh with a name that defines who we are, what we want to build growing forward. So it was really powerful and beautiful.
Oh, that's really neat. I love that. And it took a while for that to come around, but you never know, you know, that how the Lord is working all this out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the people, the new people he brings into our lives when we,
absolutely.
You know, when we think, okay, it's over, you know, and then, and how he worked through your adoptive daughter.
He absolutely did.
So I have to ask you how the Matthew West song came about.
Yes. When I was back in, I had just graduated high school, and I was actually, I think I was living with my bio mom again for a season. And yet I was looking at aging out, and I was just really freaked out about just having this sense of, I'm not wanted here. I'm not cherished. No one really sees me, right? Like I really felt really deep shame of having some really hard encounters in those few years. And I had also lost my dad to suicide when I was 15. And
oh,
so
wow.
There was just a lot going on in the season. And I wrote Matthew and I said, listen, I'm about to age out of foster care, and I don't feel like I have family. I don't feel like I'm going to be able to be launched into the world successfully. But I have come to know that God is a father and that he loves me. And I want to be that light for others. I don't want this to be just where my story ends. You know, I want to give him glory for my life. And I want to choose him over and over again in the best ways that I can, because I know that life with him isn't wasted. And
wow.
Never thought he would read it, you know, thought he would pick mine. And he did. And he ended up writing The Story of Your Life, the title track song. To the CD after
my story.
Oh,
yeah, we all know it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What's the name of the particular song, The Story of Your Life? Is that the name of
it? It is. It's the title track of the CD, The Story of Your Life. Mm. And what's really cool is in our first radio interview, he gets on, and I've never heard the song before, right? And so it's the first time even talking to Matthew. And he says, Kristen, he's like, I really just feel like this isn't the end of your life. It's just the beginning.
Oh.
And I was like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I love that. And he was like, that is the first line of your song, and I want to play it for you. And we just felt like in that moment, like God had really secured, like, this is not only my song, but this is going to be a testament to many other people, regardless if there's foster care in your story. Like,
that's
so many people that have had really just wounds in childhood that feel like they're going into adulthood alone. And this can be the testament to say, like, nothing is truly an end point in your life unless you decide it is. It's really, truly all just a series of yeses and relationship with the Lord that can empower us to and build an incredible life with him.
Oh, that's an amazing story. And that, like you said, he read it and then he wrote a song about it. That's just incredible.
Very honored. He is amazing. And he is such a preacher. My goodness.
Uh-huh.
Some of his concerts, I've just been like, cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lord.
Oh, yeah. Well, you really have just, he's right. This new chapter of your life that, you know, that you are living and just keep moving forward and you're just not afraid to go for it. I love that about you. You're in school right now to be a counselor. Is that right?
I am. I'm at Regent University. I'm getting my licensure in counseling and so excited to see where he's going to put me, for sure.
So, Kristen, since you, you know, as a child were in the system and now you've been working for a while in the foster care system, and like I said, you're everywhere to me. It just seems like the Lord's just using you in so many different spaces in this ministry. Can you kind of share from your perspective, if you would just share with us some wisdom or some things you're seeing, maybe on what we're doing better, how things are improving, and maybe some improvements that you're really hoping and praying to see within the foster care system?
Sure. I definitely think we have come so far in being trauma-informed. You know, going back to the system that I grew up in is so different than the one today. So I'm so thankful. And especially if there's any therapists or social workers or agencies out there that are being and putting effort into being trauma-informed, you are what's going right with the system. We're very thankful.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing that even with the caseworkers that my kids have had, the kids that have come to my home, just understanding trauma and my kids as a whole has really made a difference in treating them and helping them heal versus just keeping them stable in a home, right?
Mm.
Also, I feel like there are very few people that are actually called to be foster parents, right? And the very few people that are called to bring someone into their home that they did not birth or raise. And I think that one call to action in the church would be that everyone can do something, mm-hmm. and that there has to be wraparound care that isn't government programs, right? Like, we cannot put the safety and the well-being and the future of these children into the hands of the government. It's got to be us. It's got to be us stepping up. So I have a lot of people in my community that will sometimes just drop by a meal. Some people will come and take one of my girls just for an hour for, you know, a family dinner at their house or movie night, or, you know, it doesn't have to even be spending a lot of commitment or funds. It can literally just be showing up and giving these kids and young people as much exposure to healthy relationships and adults as they possibly can. And I think a lot of people are so worried that they're going to do the wrong thing, or they're stuck in this idea of like making sure that they have healthy boundaries, which is great. But if we excuse those and replace it for just not wanting to be inconvenienced or uncomfortable, we're missing out on the gospel and what God's called to do for widows and orphans.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a big believer that if you are breathing, you have something to give, and it does not have to look like fostering or making these big commitments, just showing up and praying or mentoring or letting me call and just cry for an hour and then get back to it. All of it is so needed, because most foster parents do quit within the first year. I think somewhere it's like 90%.
Mm.
And so if we're called to really take care of widows and orphans, then it looks like a community wraparound care.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point about boundaries. That's a big word right now in churches, right?
Ooh,
I know.
It is.
And it's a
and it's
a
good.
Yeah, it is. It's, yeah.
But I think we've misunderstood the heart of it, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, there's a young lady that had come through my home that had extreme challenges, and some people were like, you know, it's too much. It's too unhealthy for you to do this. And I'm like, you're right. I'm not the savior here. Jesus is. But I can ask you to step up and help me, right? Like, this idea of boundaries of saying, we're not going to take on someone else's responsibility for their healing. You know, I'm not responsible for these kids' future. God is. But I do know that it is very uncomfortable to be a foster parent.
Yeah.
It is very uncomfortable to be a social worker or a therapist. And there are lines. We have to really work on our own healing so that the lines, when we do cross the lines into helping someone, that it is from a healthy place. We're not saviors. We are people that are saying yes to what God's called us to, and we follow the peace. That's what I feel like boundaries really are, is you follow what God's telling you to with boldness and with humility, and saying, none of this is truly my responsibility, because when it goes great, Lord, you get the glory, mm-hmm. because the fruit is your responsibility, not mine.
Yeah, when you and I were talking once before, you just said, Lynette, I believe the church can step in with excellence, not with the savior mentality, but with excellence.
Wow. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and what would that look like? Like, you're fostering right now, is that correct? Currently fostering?
I am not a licensed foster home anymore. Mm-hmm. I did close my home before I went to grad school because
well,
I am
yeah.
single
yeah,
and I wanted
right.
to do it well.
I
but
can understand that. Yeah.
I became aware of some young women that are employed by a local nonprofit here, that housing is such a huge issue here for foster youth. And so I do have, God bless me with this beautiful 4-bedroom home in Raleigh. And so I felt like it was his. I wanted to give it back to him. So I have invited these girls to come in and pay a very minimal amount of rent to be able to live here and to just have a safe, stable place. And some challenges and some more
right.
needs have come
yeah.
up than I anticipated.
Yeah.
But I've been reaching out to my community and saying, I need you to step in and help me to make this possible.
I was kind of raised the same way, that to share what you have, you know, if you have extra space, mm-hmm. you know, my mom trained me in that well to share that with someone else. And there are so many ways, and we've talked about this so much on the podcast, that the church can step in. But when you look back, Kristen, over your younger years or when you were a teenager and now you're adulting and helping take care of others and getting your, well, you're getting your degree, you know, you're continuing your education to be a counselor. When you think back on some things that were done for you when you were younger or those times of struggles, what are some things that kind of stand out to you that were so incredibly helpful?
Wow. There were several people that I feel like God put in my life in the church that just had such gentleness, that had such intention. You know, they saw me. And I was a kid that was very bubbly and bounced around. And I would go up and I would just hug strangers at the grocery store, right? A lot of attachment issues. Right. But it also, when it kind of got a little bit older, it turned more inward to like anger and shame of myself. And so it was hard for me to look at people in the eyes. I really, my entire personality kind of changed to this bubbly extrovert student council vice president to this very broken young person who would go to church and just be fearful, and not of what judgment or what people think, but just to be in a space so big, full of people, and people not understand what I had come through or even realize that making connection with people is hard. And so one of the things I felt like were most empowering is, and I do it now too, if I walk into a church service, I'm just so hyper aware of those that are sitting beside themselves that are looking down. We don't want to be too much for people or make it awkward, but just genuine curiosity of people and their stories and getting to know and inviting them in. If you see people by yourself, inviting them to lunch or for a walk. And you can maintain boundaries while having a lifestyle of invitation.
And so those are the things you remember, people that just invested in you and just took the time to see you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I know that it's been an incredible transition, you know, just your life story. How do we even contain it in one podcast or begin to share it? But how were you able to... how are you able to continue your education and to just, you know, I know you struggle with suicidal thoughts and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. What really launched you into adulthood and enabled you to just, you know, be able to make those choices for college and your career and that sort of thing?
Sure. I was living in my car trying to go to school, but it didn't work out. I'd failed out the semester. And so I'd taken a long break from college. And I had gotten really sick with pneumonia, and I went to church to hang out with my friend Michael, who was on the worship team. And this lady was there, and I had told Michael just a little bit, and I was very careful with my story, and I was very careful with my situation because I didn't want pity, right? I didn't want people to try to step in and do what they thought was best. But this lady came off stage, and she was the piano player. And she came up to me and she just said that God told her that I was coming home with her.
Oh, my goodness.
Not even knowing me. And it kind of freaked me out. I was like, oh, my God. But it was the most God thing I have ever, the biggest yes and the best yes, other than following Jesus, I've said in my life. Barbara Marty is to this day one of the closest people in my life and the champion that I know I can always go back to for support, for care. I moved into her home. I lived with her for the longest I've ever lived with anybody. And she made sure I got back in school. She just mentored me and loved me. She had a baby grand piano in our living room and she would play worship music and just sing out to the Lord. And so I got to really even deepen my intimacy with God being in her home. And she actually went to a lot of the Matthew West things with me, which I was really incredibly thankful for. And gosh, I love her so much. And so thankful for her consistency in my life. And so she was a big champion. And I got scholarships, which really helped. There are some programs out there for former foster youth. So,
and that helped you pay for college?
It did. It helped me pay for college.
Just to have that person to hear that just the Lord just had her see you. And she was brave to step out. That's putting your yes on the table right there.
Yep, absolutely.
I can't imagine what your friend Michael is thinking, watching this whole thing play out. He thought it was just about a conversation between the two of you that night. So,
goodness. Yes.
Oh, that is great. Well, update us now. Tell us about the PBS story, how that came about. God is really using your story.
Oh goodness. They're just little yeses, and he keeps turning them into big ones. So I don't get any of the glory. I just keep saying yes. I was granted a wish through this nonprofit called One Simple Wish, and they grant wishes for kids in foster care or those who've aged out. And when I was first becoming a foster parent, I really wanted to learn how to cook better so that I was unfortunately cooking frozen chicken in the microwave, right? Not healthy, not good at all. So I wanted some basic cooking classes to feel more competent as a foster parent. And they helped tremendously. And so anytime this nonprofit needed someone for like a testimony or something, I was like, oh, I'd love to share what an impact this made. And they said, well, we actually have nominated you for this documentary, and they're deciding on who they're going to pick. And it's going to be about celebrating those in America who've overcome great odds but are giving back. And we got to go flown to New York and cook with this famous Italian chef, Lydia Bastianich. She's amazing. She's so
She
sweet.
is
I got to
amazing.
be in her
Yes.
home, and she gave me some of her late mother's dishes. Like, it was
Oh,
just this
goodness.
beautiful experience of just taking what I had learned and being able to just bring so much meaning and celebration. Because I think that's something that's sometimes missing is like, yes, I would like, thank you for seeing that I have overcome these odds, but also celebrating the fact of what God has done in my life and he's brought me this far. And I just felt so loved on and celebrated. And it got to reach millions of people that got to hear, what God has done. And through my adoption, being a foster parent and adopting my daughter, who was only 10 years younger than me, and just how God made all of that possible is just really beautiful.
Yeah, so it's called Lydia Celebrates America, and this episode is called Overcoming the Odds.
It is,
Yeah,
yes.
what a blessing. I love cooking shows. So add that with a foster care testimony and seeing someone like you that is still serving in this ministry and you mix all that together. That's the perfect show for me right there.
Oh, it was so much fun and so many funny moments. I think some of them made them on and some didn't. I got some great cooking lessons on how to chop onions and things.
Oh,
So,
wow. We all need
a
that.
lot
Yeah.
of
Yeah. I hear a lot of people say they didn't learn to cook growing up because their moms didn't want their mess in the kitchen.
fun.
But I have found cooking with my daughters, especially the ones the Lord, brought into our family through adoption, to be such a great time of connection for us.
Yes, and that's actually something part of the documentary talk about how food extends your table. It gives you opportunity to bring people in, and just to increase the love. So that's so good. I love that you do that with your daughter.
Yeah, and that's a big part of what Lydia teaches on there. That's a big part of her life as well, the cook that you got to do all that with. Well, I know you also just got back from a retreat with Tori Hope Peterson, and that had to be an incredible, just a blessing to your soul. I mean, just a balm for your soul, right? Because she challenged you to do a lot of things with your story. Tell us about that, the whatever part you feel comfortable with about that retreat weekend.
Yes, it was incredible. So Tori Hope Peterson, a former foster youth who is well known, and she travels and speaks, and she just wrote this book called Fostered, and it really just shares her story, but it's also a call to action to many people who love on those who are vulnerable. And so I got invited to go out with on a retreat with 12 other women, and just got to be poured into in community of each other, because that's the most important
Yes.
part, is that there's really not much bringing us together and being able for us to have the common language and just to share things from a deep place of being known, and then being able to be encouraged to write our stories and be published or to speak. And gosh, just mentorship by her alone was just worth it.
Oh, I
But
can't
then all those
imagine.
ladies gathered to there, and the excellent writers and speakers, man, it just, all of us have a chat group going on from the retreat, and it's just the glory just keeps continuing and the healing. And I'm kind of getting teared up just thinking about just how thankful I am that I'm not alone in this. Like, there are other former foster youth and people who have come through hard stuff that are willing to say yes to the Lord and just go after what he has for them. And Yeah, it's just, I'm so thankful.
Man, it just reminds me of Joseph saying to his brothers, right? What you intended for evil, God meant for good.
Amen. And
man, just you're a beautiful testimony of that. And I see from the outside looking in, God is raising up an army of young women who have been in the system and who are now even fostering, or they're adoptive moms, or they were, you know, they were adopted internationally and they're putting their pieces together. But they are giving God the glory, and He is raising up an army in your generation, and I'm so grateful you're a part of it.
Thank you.
Oh, Kristen, thank you for joining us today. People can find more about you and your what you speak on, or invite you to speak. Where can they go to?
They can find me on Instagram. Okay. It's Kay Burgey, KBUERGEY.
Okay.
That's
Kay Burgey on Instagram.
Yeah, and I'd send a message. I'd love to say hi and get connected. For
great.
Sure.
Well, Kristen, thanks for joining us today. You've been a blessing, and man, we've learned so much from you. Aww. I am so excited on the seasons ahead for you. Will you come back and join us and catch us up on what's going on?
I would love that. This
great.
Has been wonderful.
Thank you, Kristen. Well, if you were as blessed by Kristen's story today as I was, I hope you'll share it with a friend. And for more information on foster care, adoption, building that community, please go to sinrelief.org.